Good morning, everybody. It's 10 o'clock and time to start our hearing today. I'm State Representative Frank Hornstein, and this is a joint hearing of the Transportation Finance and Transportation Policy Committees. We've had several of them, but it's my understanding this may be the last, so we're very close to the last one we have, at least for a while. So get to know your policy and finance colleagues, and appreciate everybody being here on time. So today we're going to get a more in-depth view of the governor's budget as it relates to transportation. And so we'll have presentations for both MnDOT and the Met Council. The way we'll structure the hearing this morning is that we'll have MnDOT go first. We'll have Ms. Hatch go through the presentation, and then we'll save our questions for the end. So we'll go roughly till about maybe quarter to 11, 10 to 11 with MnDOT, and then we can spend the balance of the morning with the Met Council. And if we end early, we end early, but it's my intention to make sure that we get all the questions answered, especially because we have a large committee today. So with that, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and then we'll proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tracy Hatch. I am the Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And it's my pleasure to be here with you today to present to you a little bit of our budget overview. And we won't spend a lot of time on that. I just wanted to provide you a context. And then we'll get into the governor's change items. So again, I know you had a presentation a couple of weeks ago with the Commissioner Zelli, and he presented a few slides that was kind of a high-level budget overview as well. I'm going to provide a little bit more detail. I'm not going to walk through all the detail, but I just wanted you to have it. And I just wanted to mention that what he provided to you is our current law forecast base, and what you'll see today in all of the numbers I provide is our current law forecast base plus the governor's recommended change items. I've included a couple of slides here. I know you've seen them before. Again, I won't go over them in great detail, but these represent the size of the system that MnDOT and other state partners are responsible for. I'll point out just a couple of items for you. We currently manage on the state trunk highway system 11,900 lane miles. We have 3,627 bridges that MnDOT is responsible for, and there's 135 state-funded airports in Minnesota, and that funding does flow through MnDOT. In terms of water freight, we have public ports in Duluth, Winona, Red Wing, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. Rail freight, we ship about 243 million tons. And for transit, we have transit, Greater Minnesota Transit in 78 Minnesota counties. This is a slide that just shows you a quick breakdown of our workforce. In historical 2011, we had 4,964 full-time equivalents. And we're forecasting in 2013 at the end of the year that we'll be at 4,882 full-time equivalents. The big jump you see there from 12 to 13 is primarily due to the early retirement incentive in which we allowed a number of employees to take advantage of that incentive to allow us to do some restructuring, to decrease our costs overall, and to create some better efficiencies within the department. I'll also point out that in 2014, you'll see that there's going to be 200 IT employees that are removed out of the MnDOT compensation and out of the MnDOT FTE numbers. Those you'll see reflected in the minute numbers as well. So just breaking down the budget in a couple of different slices here, I'll start with the appropriation type. As I'm sure you're all aware, and I don't mean to speak to you about information that you already know, but just again to set the context, we have three different types of appropriations that we receive at MnDOT as well as other state agencies, and they are direct appropriations, which as you can see is the bulk of our appropriations. Those are appropriations that are set in appropriation law and come through the budget bill process. We have statutory appropriations. About 21% of MnDOT's funding comes from statutory appropriations, and those are set by other legislative action. An example of that is permits, where we're allowed to collect permits for oversized or overweight vehicles and then deposit those receipts in the trunk highway fund. And then the final, where you have a very small amount of open appropriations, and those are appropriations where we will forecast the amount that we believe we'll need for that, and but spending is based on actual. An example of that is the indirect that MnDOT pays to MMB for statewide services. Again, here's the numbers. I won't walk through the numbers in detail, but I did want you to have them to provide, again, a little bit more context. for you. This breaks down our direct, our statutory, and our open appropriations for both the current biennium as well as the next biennium. When we talk about the number of funds we have, MnDOT has six transportation funds that we forecast. I wanted to break that down for you as well by fund.
Excuse me, Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know when we should ask the questions, but
well, if it's we'll generally wait till the end. But if you have something that's really very, very specific to the slide, or you know, maybe with a little more urgency, I'd be happy to call on you. So, but why don't you proceed? And but generally, we'll just wait till the end.
Okay, thank you. I had understood that there are some stimulus funds in the budget here, unspent but to be spent, and maybe you could at some point give us some detail on that, please.
Proceed. Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely, and I have a couple of slides on that a little bit later, and I'll be sure to go through some more detail on that for
you. Thank you.
So again, this breaks down Trunk Highway Fund, our transit assistance funds, and the other associated funds that MnDOT is responsible for, and the biennial expenditures by fund. I will also caveat to say anytime you see in this presentation the word expenditures, what we mean by that is planned spending for the fiscal year. And again, that is current law forecast base plus governor's recommended change items. And again, more detail by in terms of numbers for each of those funds for over the course of the biennium. Just one note I'd like to make, actually, on that previous slide. A couple of things that you may or may not be completely aware of is when we say special revenue funds, I just wanted to give you an example of what those are. In MnDOT terms, most of our funding in special revenue comes from partnerships with local governments, local units of government, either to deliver some construction services for them, for which they reimburse us, or to provide maintenance activities for them, for which they reimburse us. An example might be a bridge that's jointly owned by MnDOT in Wisconsin, and we plow the bridge rather than half the bridge, and then Wisconsin reimburses us for any expenses that are due to them. The other example of that is just damage restitution funds. So if someone hits a guardrail, we bill their insurance company for it, and then those funds come back into MnDOT and are offset the Trunk Highway Fund expenditures. This is a little bit more of a breakdown of the change items by fund, and again, here momentarily I'll touch in more great detail on the change items. But wanted to give you a sense for what the variety of changes are that are included in this budget. You'll see the $784 million at the bottom of the third column from the right, where it says dollar change. $784 million sounds like a lot, so I wanted to give you a sense of what that is. $412 million of that, $412,109,000 to be precise, is the forecasted base change. And again, that's current law. That's based on receipts or other revenue that we expect to come in to offset the expenditures. And $372,600,000 of that total $784 million is from governor's recommended change items. And I'll break those down for you in more detail here just in a little bit. This is the structure by which our direct appropriations come to us, the program and budget structure. Our four programs, excuse me, are multimodal systems, the local roads, state roads, and agency management. And then you'll see the associated budget activities under each of those programs. This is the way you'll see our budget bill come out, and this is the way it will probably pass through the legislature. Again, in multimodal systems, we have aeronautics, transit, freight, and passenger rail. For local roads, we have county and city, county state aid roads and municipal state aid roads. In the state roads program, we have five budget activities: program planning and delivery, operations and maintenance, electronic communications, debt service, and we will talk about debt service here a little bit more in a minute, and state road construction. In the agency management program, we have agency services as well as building services. To give you a sense what's in some of the more major pieces of our funding, primary operating dollars for MnDOT come from the state roads program and agency management. So an example in state roads, program planning and delivery is often a question we get asked. What's included in program planning and delivery? What does that mean? That is typically system planning and integration, development and management of projects, specific projects, overall construction program management and administration of contracts. Environmental work is often a part of that, and right-of-way purchases. When we talk about agency management, to give you a sense of some of the activities that occur in agency management, HR functions, finance, administration, procurement, payroll, communications, some department leadership and management, strategic planning and policy, ombudsman services, audit services. Those are some of the activities that occur within the agency management function. And to show you an example of the expenditures, and again, that is our current forecast base plus governor's recommended change items spending for the next biennium, you'll see that broken out there by program. And again, the dollar detail to follow that. In terms of the overall spending out of the state roads program, again, in those five program areas, budget activity areas I mentioned a moment ago, you'll see 53% of that it goes to state road construction, 16% to program planning and delivery, and again, that is essentially all of the engineering activities that take place up to contract award. Electronic communications is about 1%, and we do have a change item regarding electronic communications, and I'll cover that here again in just a minute. Operations and maintenance is about 18% of the total state roads program, and debt service is about 12%. More detail. If at any time you're interested in a greater breakdown or you'd like me to come back and present more in terms of walking you through the specific numbers, I'd be happy to do that. If you would like your staff to meet with any of our staff, we'd be happy to do that. In fact, we have met with House and Senate fiscal staff to cover some of the numbers. The biennial budget system, we've heard from folks that it's challenging and hard to kind of see the numbers that they've seen in the past. And so we have provided a crosswalk and side-by-sides that are similar to how fiscal staff are used to seeing it in the past. So we have met with them and provided an update to them, and we'd be happy to do that further. So I'm not trying to glaze over the numbers. I just want to make sure we get on to the change items that you were looking for. This again shows overall expenditures for MnDOT by category. This is all funds, all types of funds. You'll see again here, debt service then, when you combine it with all of our spending, is about 6%, and you'll see our general operating at about 11%. So moving on to slide 17, I'm sure you all know this. I believe that you saw this slide previously with the commissioner, but again, I like to set the context for our overall spending. Our major sources of revenue on the highway side come from gas tax, tab fees, and motor vehicle sales. There's a small amount of other. The majority of what makes up that other category is interest income in the fund. Those four sources of revenue are deposited into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and then the Constitution breaks out how that funding should be distributed to a 95% distribution and a 5% set aside. Of the 95% distribution, the Constitution spells out that 62% of that 95% be deposited into the Trunk Highway Fund, 29% of the 95% be deposited into the County State Aid Highway Fund, and 9% of the 95% is deposited into the Municipal State Aid Streets Fund. Of the 5% set aside, 53.5% of that is deposited into the Flexible Highway Account, 30.5% goes to town roads, and 16% goes to town bridges. You'll see also there that there's a DNR transfer portion that comes off of the HUTD. I'd just like to provide a little clarification for you on that. That is a portion of the gas tax receipts to the fund. It doesn't include tab fees or motor vehicle sales tax, so purely gas tax receipts. A portion of that goes to DNR to compensate for the use of road vehicles and their share of the gas tax. In fiscal year 12, $21.2 million was transferred to the DNR. That represents approximately 3%, more specifically about 2.5% of the total gas tax receipts. This is a slide that demonstrates our Minnesota gasoline excise tax. We have currently, technically, 25 cents is our gasoline excise tax. We also have a 3.5-cent debt service surcharge that was provided to us from the 2008 Chapter 152 legislation that actually also increased the actual gas tax by 5 cents. That increase, as well as the debt service surcharge, has been fully phased in, effective last July 1st. And so the total that Minnesota is receiving off gas tax and excise tax is 28.5 cents. We're often asked about how do we compare to other states and our neighboring states, so we've provided that for you there. You'll see that last bullet, as of October 2012, for the American Petroleum Institute, we have the eighth highest gas tax rate in the nation. We are often asked also about bonding, so I wanted to give you a small context of bonding. We have two types of bonding that are employed by MnDOT. We have general obligation bonding, which is a smaller quantity of bonding for MnDOT, and I'll get into the trunk highway bonding next. But basically, the Constitution prohibits use of general obligation bonds on the trunk highway system, and it also prohibits the use of trunk highway bonds on any non-trunk highway system. So when we need to do activities that are not in the trunk highway system, such as ports, rail, transit, things like that, we would need to use GO bonds for that. Since 2012, from 2008 to 2012, we have been authorized $353 million in GO bonds, and we have committed $239 million. When I say committed, what I mean there is expended or encumbered. There's a number of those bonds that are local bonds that go to local road and bridge projects, and there's typically a lag there as we need to get local authority and have local units of government sign resolutions and in order for us to commit the funds specifically to that project. All of those dollars are well on their way to being fully committed in terms of all of the projects on the local side. Just one more thing to note about the GO bonds is the general fund pays all of the debt service on the GO bonds. What's different about the trunk highway bonds is MnDOT pays all of the trunk highway debt service out of the trunk highway fund. Since 2012, up till 2012, from 2008, we have been authorized about $2 billion in bonds. All of that has been programmed. We have $1.1 billion that has been currently committed, and again, that means expended or encumbered specifically on a project. And we sell bonds only when we need the debt service. So we wouldn't sell a bond prematurely unless we actually needed the cash. And we do a lot of cash flow forecasting on the bonds, and we work with M&B to do projections of the expenditures out. And we right now have about $1,037,000,000 that have been that are sitting out there that we have not cashed yet. So we're about halfway through the large program in terms of selling of the bonds. This slide shows our bond debt service on the trunk highway side. You'll see the blue line represents the current forecast, which was provided in November, just this past November. The red line represents the forecast from almost a year ago, February of 2012. As you know, there'll be another forecast that will be released at the end of February. The general fund forecast release is on the 28th, and we'll be releasing our forecast at that time as well. You'll see that there was a major shift to the left and an increase in the blue line, which represents an increase in debt service for that year, and I want to explain what that's about. We had a couple of things happen in 2012, and actually in 2013. We had a pretty significant premium on our bonds, and what that means is when we go to sell bonds, the investors want a 5% return on our bonds, and whenever the return is less than 5%, they actually sort of give us an offset up front, and then we make it up later in the bonds. So that reduces our debt service in the first year. And in 2012, you'll see the 72.6 number. We actually anticipated that to be about $56 million higher than it was. But again, that was because of savings that one year off the bond premium. In 2013, we had a similar situation. The net difference was about $6 million, and the reason for that is we had a nice big premium, but we also advanced two large bridge projects, the St. Croix and the Winona project, and that also corresponds to the jump in 14 that you see there, fiscal year 14. So again, the increase and the pulling to the left of the debt service line you see there is a result primarily of those two large bridge projects that were a little bit farther ahead on, were able to sell the bonds early, take advantage of the low interest rates, and keep the project moving forward. All of those dollars were previously in forecast, so it wasn't new spending; it was just earlier spending. And you'll see in 2017 we kind of achieve our maximum debt service payment of just over $200 million. This is a little bit more of a breakdown of where the numbers actually reside and how they relate to our current policy on the debt on the Trunk Highway Fund. We have four policies at MnDOT that govern the Trunk Highway Fund, and one of them is the debt service policy. We have a 20% limit on the debt service policy, and what that means is we can only incur debt at MnDOT up to 20% of the state revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund. And so right now you'll see the middle column there demonstrates in each of the fiscal years listed where we expect under our current forecast to reside, and we top out in 2016 at about 18%. The column on the far right where it says variance from 20% policy limit, that is the amount of debt service. So again, the annual amount of the annual payment that we could absorb between the 18%, for example, and 20% is our debt limit. What I always say, and I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't say, is again, this is as a percentage of our state revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund. So if, for example, a gallon of gas reached $5 a gallon this summer, we would likely see a decrease in our revenue like we saw in 2009, and that would quickly change that number north of 18% pretty quickly. So we watch this, we monitor this, and we will have an update again for you with the February forecast. So getting on to maybe what you're really looking for today, and that is our change items from the governor's recommendation. This is a brief list, and I will go through each of these in more detail here momentarily, but this is a list of all of the change items. We have heard from our folks at MnDOT, our four folks across the street at MNB, and we've heard from several committees within the House and the Senate that, again, the detail that was provided in previous biennial budget releases was more comprehensive, and so we are trying to provide that information. MNB will be releasing, I actually think it might even be today that they're going to release a set of one-pagers on each of the budget requests. And I think they will do it as an addendum to the final budget bill. We do have that information as well, so if what I provide for you here today you'd like more detail on, we're happy to follow up with you. This is a slide that shows the expenditure impact, and again, that is planned spending, forecast base plus governor's recommended change items for each of the funds, and then a small descriptor there of what the change item is. And I will go through each of these here momentarily. One of the biggest changes for MnDOT is the Transportation Economic Development Program. The governor is recommending $10 million each year in fiscal years 14 through 17 from the general fund. Typically, this has been funded from either Trunk Highway Fund or general obligation bonds. A general fund appropriation in this case really allows the program to support much more by the way of local road projects and critical modal projects. TED is a collaboration between MnDOT and DEED. It's a competitive selection process used to identify and support projects that assist development of newer expanding businesses. And here the focus really is on permanent jobs in permanent high-paying head of household type jobs. The projects work to support the statewide transportation network. This lists some of the program goals. There are a few other goals, but I wanted to pull out for you the biggest program goals, and that is to address both the economic and transportation system objectives of the state. Again, to create and preserve head of household jobs and to leverage private and local investment into those transportation projects. So the benefactors of the project will come to the table with an assistance in the funding of the project. And then, of course, to collaborate, to promote collaborative and innovative partnerships among all of the stakeholders. Before I get into the program history, there's a couple other points I'd like to make. This collaborative program was established in 2010. It is a multimodal, multi-jurisdictional transportation economic development and job creations program that requires local or private sector match and accelerates transportation projects in order to promote job creation and retention. And again, those are head of household type permanent jobs, as well as to improve the state's economic competitiveness. The program's function and purpose is to create and preserve jobs, improve the state's economic competitiveness, leverage greater private and local investment in critical public infrastructure, and accelerate transportation infrastructure improvements. The program provides state support up to 70% of project construction. This general fund appropriation would allow much greater flexibility in the types of projects that can be that we can legally support. Again, many of the local projects, local work on the local system cannot be funded from the Trunk Highway Fund. And a supplemental general fund contribution will allow the program to support a much broader variety of highway and local road projects, as well as critical modal projects that support economic development, including transit, freight, rail, port, and air facilities.
Excuse me. I saw that this is definitely an interest of Representative Mahoney's, and you know, his homework assignment has been to figure out who ultimately administers this. So, Representative Mahoney, do you want to restate your question here, or do you have a variation of your question?
I just, you know, I'm trying to do my homework.
Yeah.
Trying to do my homework. And my only question is, I'm sure you have a list of the 70 applications and the 24 selected, and where you provided the $59 million, and I would appreciate a copy of that. And I'm sure that maybe the other members of the committee might, but I particularly like when they can get it to me, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, we'd be happy to do that. We do have a complete breakdown of which projects were funded and where they are in the cycle, so we'd be happy to provide that.
Members, I just wanted to say, since we are kind of nearing the end, I think it'd be fine if people have some of their questions we can start. I think we're doing well with time now, so I'm going to open it up. We're going to get to you have four more slides, I know that, but I know we have people that really are anxious to get their questions on the table. So I'm going to start with Representative Beard and then go to Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure my anxiety has to do with the coffee I'm drinking this morning.
No, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, it's the Steeler mug. That's what that is, yes. Ms. Hatch, welcome to the committee. Back on slide 9, can I back up, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Page 9, slide 17. To shed a little light for the committee here, the DNR transfers, we have a constitutional question there about the dedication of the money, but somehow we've gotten around that to account for snowmobiles and off-trail vehicles and so on and so forth. I think you indicated it's about 2.5% of the gas tax. Is that set in statute or by policy? Do we quibble about that here and set that here between us and the DNR? Or where does that number come from?
Is that?
Or is that something for another committee meeting another day? That's
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I believe that is set in the Constitution. Statute.
It's in statute.
Excuse me. Yeah, it's set in statute, and it identifies which of the fuels to go to support the DNR.
Related to that, Mr. Chair, then the trails that are built along new highways and so on, can that come from that fund, or do we let DNR pay for those, or do we use highway user funds to build trails along highways that are being rebuilt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I believe it depends on the project. It depends on the trail. I believe it fits directly adjacent to the trunk highway system, and there's some trunk highway benefit to having a trail or a bike path, for example, listed next to the trunk highway system. In other words, to keep motorists from being on the trunk highway system. In some cases, that can be rolled into a project and used as part of the project funds. In other cases, it cannot be, and we have, I believe, federal funds can be used to support that. But if you'd like more detail, we'd be happy to provide that.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask about that offline. But
okay,
thank you.
It's a good question.
Thank you.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is along the same lines as Representative Mahoney's. I made little notes on 25. I, too, would like to get the history as Representative Mahoney's requested. I'm interested to find out if we can find either on our website or maybe you can just make it available to us, the criteria, the selection process, how's it weighted, and who selects. As far as the awarding of that economic development funds.
Ms. Hatch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can provide some of that information for you today, and my counterparts that are here listening, if there's something I missed, we can certainly feel free to follow up. To answer another question that Representative Mahoney had asked, also, who administers the project? It's really jointly administered by MnDOT and the Department of Employment and Economic Development, really a close collaboration.
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you. I guess my understanding is they're going to look at the cost and so on, but in terms of economic development, that would come from DEED, I'm assuming. So I guess that my interest is to have some hard facts in front of me. You know, an email from you would be certainly quite sufficient in terms of getting a better understanding of how those things are done. So I can go back to my own communities and convey to them, you know, if we're doing some of these things, new businesses, Mayo Clinic, how do we get access to some of these things?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we'd be happy to provide that information to you. There is a website. We can certainly send the link as well. In terms of the selection criteria, 35% of the selection criteria is from the transportation system category, which is implications for safety, access, mobility, and modal choice. 35% of the criteria, the weighting on the scoring, is from economic development, so that's implications for statewide job creation and retention. 20% of the weighting is from their financial plan, so that's the extent to which the proposal leverages private and or public resources from those who directly benefit from the project. And 10% is project readiness, so the likelihood that the project can be completed on time and move forward with the funding in a reasonable amount of time. But we'd be happy to get you more information as well as the link to the website.
Okay. All right, thank you. And if there's no questions, let's move on. I think we have five more slides. Representative Mahoney.
Just for Representative Benson, this Ted will be gone over in jobs and economic development pretty close, and I'll make sure that you get invited.
Okay. Well, and thank you. Those are all good. Those are very important questions, and particularly because I think a number of us are looking at the potential similar type of program to look at corridors, and so it would be very interesting to see what's worked and what hasn't worked with TED, and if there's a need to expand it into some other similar criteria. So this is very helpful. Let's move on with the presentation. I think it'll take maybe another 5 to 10 minutes, and then we'll just leave the rest. Then we'll just get on with some more questions that people have. So proceed.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of the $59 million breakdown for TED, I wanted to just let you know that $30 million of that $59 million came from trunk highway bonds from Chapter 388 from the laws of 2010. $20 million came from an SRC appropriation spelled out in Chapter 3, laws of 2011. $3 million of that was GO bonds that were appropriated to the Department of Employment and Economic Development in 2012. $4.1 million came from Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure from DEED, and $1.5 million came from the Innovative BDPI. Again, that's the Business Development Public Infrastructure from DEED. So as you can see, it is a close collaboration between the agencies. The governor also recommended two change items that support our state road construction budget, so I wanted to break those down for you. The total is $338 million, which you've seen in the governor's press releases. Of that $338 million, $263 million are federal funds from the new federal authorization in MAP 21, and $75 million are additional funds off of the state trunk highway fund balance that would go to support state road construction. And I'll provide a little bit more on both of these. So of the $263 million, $125.4 million of that is for fiscal 14, and $137.6 is for fiscal year 15, for that $263 million biennial total. This increases the state road construction appropriation to make federal funds available for MnDOT to spend. This is not actually new money. It's not new spending. It's just an amount above our legal forecast base. And the reason for that is it's a little bit complicated, but the basic reason is in 2009, at the end of Safety Lou, which is our prior authorization, prior to MAP 21, we could only put in our forecast the base amount off of that 2009 legislation. And we have typically received receipts higher than that, and so have forecast based on actual expected receipts and built the STIP around actual estimated receipts. So all of these projects, there's no net fiscal impact. There will be offsetting expenditures to correspond with this revenue. And all of these projects, all of this funding is currently dedicated to projects that are in the current STIP. The $75 million one-time appropriation for fiscal year 14 would go to support the infrastructure investments in state road construction. The funds would be sort of, we're planning to use them for the Better Roads Program, other infrastructure needs, primarily drainage, the Americans with Disabilities Act investments, and the Corridor Investment Management Strategy, or SIMS as we refer to it. Again, this comes off of the current available funds in the Trunk Highway Fund balance. And I'll provide just a little bit more here for you on what SIMS is, and certainly if you have more questions about that, we'd be happy to answer those as well. SIMS is part of the, it's a pilot program addressing investments identified through MnDOT's Corridor Investment Management Strategy. Specific investments would be identified through a competitive solicitation with the goal of funding highway projects that improve quality of life, economic competitiveness, or environmental health. MnDOT launched the SIMS program in 2012 as an effort to identify and prioritize investment opportunities on Minnesota state highways that advance the Minnesota GO vision of a transportation system that maximizes the health of people, the environment, and our economy. Through SIMS, MnDOT places a strong emphasis on building and maintaining a sustainable transportation system through solutions that ensure a high return on investment and complement the unique social, natural, and economic features of Minnesota. This funding would support a pilot SIMS solicitation in 2013 with the goal of identifying highway projects with the greatest potential to improve the Minnesota GO objectives of quality of life, economic competitiveness, and environmental health. This is one of the items that you'll see in that list of change item one-pagers that will come up from MMB. But again, we'd be happy to provide any more information or context that you would like for that as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Chair Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hatch, do you have a ready example of something that fits that category? I can't quite get my arms around this.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have a specific project that comes to mind. I can tell you that there's an advisory group that includes representation from Explore Minnesota Tourism, Department of Commerce, Department of Education, Employment, Economic Development, Health, Natural Resources, Public Safety, and Pollution Control. So I think it's pretty broad and could really range in a number of different areas. Mr. Chair, if the committee would like, Mr. Mark Nelson is here from MnDOT. He manages the SIMS program, and if you'd like a little more context at this time, he'd be happy to answer that, or we'd be happy to come back at another time, too.
Ms. Hatch, I'd like us to finish perhaps your presentation, and if there's some additional questions, then we can, beyond Representative Runbeck, then we can do that. But I appreciate that you're here and as a resource, but let's finish our presentation here.
Mr. Chair, then moving on. The next request the governor has submitted is the operations and maintenance increase of $5 million each year to support commodity inflationary costs on the trunk highway system. Currently, we have about a projection of about 3% annual inflation in the commodity purchasing, and this would catch us up about 2% on that. Again, that would be in a year, and as you know, inflation continues. But this would go a long way towards helping us to purchase those major commodities with maintaining our current buying power. And those major commodities, again, are bituminous, sand, salt, fuel, some of those really big items that we tend to lose ground on every year. Getting back to a question that was raised earlier is the economic recovery funds. We received about $550 million from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act back in 2009, and we have spent the majority of those funds, and there's been federal law changes that allow spending to continue on for those projects if the projects haven't been completed or spending hasn't been completely used. In addition, there have been a couple of cases where other states have not been able to use all of their ARRA funding, and then those funds have been redistributed to the states. So this request is to allow us to continue to use existing ARRA funds that the state has received, and also to put us in a position to be able to accept other funds if they become available. So again, trying to leverage the federal ARRA funding to the extent that we're able. The majority of these funds were spent in fiscal years 9 and 10. Some have been extended into the 12-13 biennium, and some will be continuing on through federal fiscal year 15, which is the beginning of state fiscal year 16. More than 90% of the funds were invested in the state and local road program. About 10% or less went to aeronautics, freight, transit, and passenger rail. Passenger rail project funds recently became available for planning the Northern Lights Express high-speed rail from Minneapolis to Duluth. The original $5 million in 2011 from the release canceled from the Florida project. And MnDOT was poised and able to accept those dollars at that time from Florida. In the State Airports Fund, we are asking to reduce expenditures in the State Airports Fund by $500,000 in each of the years of the coming biennium for a total of $1 million. There's a number of reasons for this, but currently, but this request would eliminate the negative balance we have currently in the fund. We're trying to manage this with minimal impacts to locals, but we want to be completely clear that it could result in a decrease to grants to local governments if we're not able to manage it in any other way. The main reason for this is we received a decrease in our receipts of the air flight property tax. That's primarily due to two airlines that are currently in bankruptcy, and those airlines are Pinnacle and Mesaba. We continue to watch that very closely, the bankruptcy proceedings. At this time, we still have every expectation that they will be making that payment at some point in the future, but since in the short term, in fiscal years 14 and 15, we don't expect those receipts to come in, we're required to decrease our spending and therefore noted as a change item. We also had decrease in the growth rate of gasoline and special fuels for aviation. It was previously forecast by the FAA at 3%, and that has been dropped to 2%. We had a decrease in investment income as well. So a few different reasons why the fund is having an imbalance there, but it's something that we're going to need to correct for the current fiscal year. The next item I'd like to present to you is the Regional Development Commission, or RDC, state planning grants. This would be an increase to the RDCs to continue their statewide planning. There's currently 12 RDCs statewide. They are partners in the Area Transportation Partnership process, particularly in soliciting and evaluating projects, integrating regional priorities in planning and project selection, and public involvement. Currently, the RDCs receive $600,000 out of the annual amount that's appropriated for program planning and delivery. We're asking to increase that to $900,000 annually from program planning and delivering. This is not new money we're asking for off the fund balance. This is asking to use existing dollars in the program planning and delivery budget activity to support this increase. The grants would increase from $50,000 annually to $75,000. Just to provide you a little bit of context about RDCs, just in case you're not familiar with that, and again, we're happy to provide any level of detail you're interested in, but real briefly, RDCs were established in 1969 by the Regional Development Act. Each active RDC maintains a transportation advisory committee and has a transportation planner on staff. MnDOT works with the individual RDCs to develop a work plan that coincides with the planning grant. Work plans include activities like road miles verification, grant solicitation, support in the development of area transportation improvement programs, and assuring that the public and local stakeholders are meaningfully involved in statewide and regional transportation plan projects. As MnDOT moves forward with the Minnesota GO vision and improving quality of life by more fully aligning the goals of the transportation system with statewide goals in the areas of housing, employment, healthcare, commerce, industry, education, and recreation, the partnership with RDCs becomes increasingly important. And finally, since their last funding increase, the RDCs have become involved in a number of newer programs, such as the Safe Routes to School program, Complete Streets Policy Development, the Highway Safety Improvement Program, and the Towards Zero Deaths Initiative. And yet funding levels have not kept pace. We also expect that the new roles that the RDCs play will be even more vital under the new MAP 21 federal legislation. We have a change item related to ARMR. ARMR stands for the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response. It is the 800 megahertz statewide system that's used by MnDOT and DPS, and as well as DNR and local law enforcement. That includes sheriff's deputies as well as municipal law enforcement officers. We're asking for an increase in the ARMR budget by $600,000 in fiscal year 14 and $1 million in 2015, and using that as a base moving forward beyond 2015. This would cover increased level of service provided through software subscription agreement with Motorola, and this has been approved by the statewide board. This increase is funded by the 911 fees on the ARMR system, and the funds would be appropriated to DPS, but MnDOT does the spending, so you'll see it in both locations in the bill. The base is currently $8.65 million that goes to ARMR operations and maintenance. 2 years ago, we received an increase of $3.59 million as the system was being built out. The more the system got built out, the more was needed to support that effort, and we believe we're very close, nearing the end of the build-out of the system. And I think I skipped over a slide. There it is. The final item I want to share with you today is our grade crossing safety account. In this case, we're not asking for an additional appropriation. We're actually asking for a change to the way the funds are managed. Currently, the current requirement is that unspent funds in the grade crossing safety account must be canceled to the trunk highway fund at the end of each fiscal year. That is very burdensome, and it's really administratively difficult as well as inefficient. And so what we're asking for is that the funds be allowed to cancel. So we're asking if we could have the authority to that we may cancel them to the trunk highway fund at the end of the biennium rather than the end of the year. And to give you an example of why that's problematic, it doesn't sound like it would be, but at the end of the fiscal year, and they're very good about using the resources, there's far more need on the grade crossing safety account projects than we have resources for. So they're very good about using the funds. If a purchase order, for example, if we paid the final payment on a project and the purchase order gets closed and it leaves $5,000, that $5,000 falls to the balance, and if it's after the close of the fiscal year, we have to go in and manually cancel that back to the fund and move the dollars forward into the next fiscal year. So it's quite administratively burdensome, and having it cancel at the end of the biennium would be more of an automatic process. The other portion of that is if the dollars, and typically it's less than $40,000 a year that would be available, and so we'd like to let them continue to use that funding on the next year of the biennium's projects.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's take three questions that I have, beginning with Representative Rumbecker, then we'll have Representative Howe and Representative Beard. And then I'd really like us to move on at about 10:50 to the Met Council has a fairly extensive presentation as well. So we'll take those three questions and move on. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hatch, perhaps you could give me a little clarification on the Regional Development Commissions. Are those federally required? I mean, is that a term of art in federal language, RDC, and so every state has them? Or is this unique to Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is a state requirement and state statute started in 1969.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've run across this entity before, but I'm guessing then that just a portion of their funding comes from transportation and must be marbleized throughout the state budget that they are still receiving funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we'd be happy to get more detail, more breakdown on where their comprehensive funding comes
Very
from
good.
And other activities that they do. The RDCs is also one of the other items that you'll see in the one-pager change item report that will come from MMB. So there will be much more detail in that one-pager as well.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to allow one more question that we didn't have on the list, and then we'll move on. So it's Representative Howe, Representative Bernardi, and we're going to give the last question to Representative Beard. Representative Howe, you're good? Okay. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In addition to that information you're going to provide us on the RDCs, can you also be clear on what kind of decision-making authority they have and responsibilities they have as well? Thank you.
Okay. There's no further questions. We'll conclude with Representative Beard. Excuse me. Okay. Representative Beard and then Representative Mason, and then we will move on. I'm sorry. I know people have – you have Ms. Hatch's contact information, so please take advantage of that if you have other questions. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, thank you. To comment and perhaps a clarification from Ms. Hatch on slide 34 on the State Airport Fund. Members, the reduction, we're very well aware of that. Some of it is a process thing, as Ms. Hatch explained, because of bankruptcies and the way we levy a component called the airline flight property tax, which is actually like the property tax that the Aeronautics Department levies and certifies through the Department of Revenue. Perhaps at another time we can chat about the philosophy behind that, Mr. Chair, and bring up
yes.
speed on that. But Ms. Hatch, this reduction, does that reflect a reduction from the one-time payment that we just got from Delta Airlines, or is that coming right after this? I'm just trying to remember, because there is a big spike. It looks like a big spike, but that's actually one of those bankruptcy payments coming home.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, we do have a large payment of $4.2 million that we expect to receive, and that will come in fiscal 13. So that is already pre-factored into the 14-15 deficit we're looking at.
So my point, Mr. Chair, is there's plenty of money for the airport fund to keep going for a while. We're not in any kind of danger yet, but we'll just keep an eye on that. So thank you.
Hi. Thank you. And I just wanted to comment just for the committee. The MAC is coming on the 14th, and we'll probably also have some additional conversation about that fund, and if there's some outstanding issues that we want to deal with MnDOT and Aeronautics Division, we can also have them here as well. So we'll have an airport day on the 14th. Last question, Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Hatch. Just a little clarification on the armor maintenance. Is that the amounts that you're using, are they specifically for new equipment, et cetera, or is this going to be ongoing?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the new amount that we're requesting is not for capital build-out. It's for primarily to support the Motorola additional services we're asking for that the statewide board has approved. There has been significant resources put towards the build-out, the capital outlay, and that is nearing completion. It is, I would dare say, substantially complete with just a few components left. But we are moving into the operations and maintenance phase of the project, and so this funding would be ongoing needed for that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for your extensive presentation and the detail. And as I said, there's if you have additional questions, we can contact you. And obviously, Mr. Rudin, Mr. Peterson are here every day, and I'm sure they would be happy to answer your questions as well. So thank you again, Ms. Hatch. And now we'd like to have the Met Council make their presentation. And again, members, if we could, if at all possible, allow them to get through their presentation, and then we'll have questions. And I know you have a fairly extensive presentation. We want to really focus on the change items. And so, members, I'm going to allow at least till 11:15. We have till 11:30, so maybe 11:15 to 11:30 for member questions. So. You can budget your time accordingly. Very nice to see you, Chair Haig. Welcome to the committee, and Mr. Shetland. Very much appreciate your time and your being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to present this. I'm going to begin with just a little bit of an overview about why transit is important for our economy, both of our region and of our state. Transit really is what connects businesses to their employees, and it is what connects workers to their jobs. It reduces congestion, which allows goods to move more freely, allows us to get where we want to get more quickly, provides significant environmental benefits, includes improvements in our air quality, and really expands choices for all of us, whether we live in the metropolitan area or travel in the metropolitan area. I just want to emphasize that our metro area really is the economic engine for our state's economy. Our seven county metro area gross metro product is approximately $200 billion. That makes us the 13th largest metropolitan economy in the country. This represents approximately two-thirds of the state's GDP. And, you know, the metro economy here in our region is actually larger than half of the states in our country. So the connection that we have as a transit provider and transit planner is really important to the economic growth, both of our region and our entire state. The map that I'm showing you today is really a status quo map of the investments in transit that are made under our current system and under our current financing system. To orient you, the red line at the bottom is a Cedar Avenue BRT line, which is going to open this summer from, or probably a little earlier than that, from Apple Valley up to the Mall of America. The blue line is what many of you have referred to as the Hiawatha line. It connects from the Mall of America into downtown Minneapolis on light rail. The purple line to the south is the I-35W MinPass lane, though it is not completely completed with station-to-station service throughout. And then the I-394 MinPass lane to the west is the purple lane. The yellow line up towards the north is the North Star Commuter Rail, and the green line to the east is the Central Corridor Light Rail line, which will open next year and provide all-day light rail service from the Union Depot in St. Paul into the interchange station in downtown Minneapolis. I'm going to also show you a map of what we could build out and what is part of the investment that is recommended in the governor's proposed budget. You can see the small gray lines reflect our bus service in the region on our regular routes. It also includes the yellow additional purple lines for BRT and additional build-out of lines such as the blue line going to the north in the Botno corridor, the olive green line in the east for the Gateway corridor, and significant investment. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the details of this, but right now I'm going to get into the 2014-2015 budget proposal. So the governor proposes a significant increase in transit funding for the region, and it would allow for an increase by 0.25% of a dedicated sales tax for the seven metro county area. This would also increase receipt to the county's Transit Improvement Board, which has a current 0.25% because of the expansions in the state sales base, state sales tax base. I think you know from the what you've heard already about the governor's budget that the current state general sales tax is 6.875. His proposal would lower the overall state sales tax rate to 5.5. With the expansion of the base, this addition would bring the sales tax back up to 5.75 in the seven metro county area. So what does that yield? This proposal would yield $348 million for transit in the 2014-2015 biennium, because 2014 would be a partial year start with the sales tax kicking in January, the $100 million. $74 million comes from a 0.25% dedicated transit tax. $26 million in that first year comes from expanded receipts to CTAB because of the base broadening. The second year is $248 million, and you can see the breakdown of that. So roughly, I would say that this proposal of the 0.25% sales tax produces about $250 million per year going forward. And of course, because it is part of a project that grows with population growth, it helps to meet the growing demand of the population here. So this budget is important because it really addresses the state budget shortfall. There is a shortfall of $18 million. The state has an obligation to pay for a portion of the new operating costs for light rail for the biennium. It would fund $118 million of the state share for the Southwest LRT project, which is the extension of the Green Line from Minneapolis out to Eden Prairie. It relieves general fund operating costs for current and future transitways because that would be paid for through the sales tax proceeds. It does relieve the state of its GO bonding share for future transitways as well. And in the 2014 and 2015 budget, because the collection of revenue happens quickly, it allows for a one-time $46.8 million reduction to the state general fund. So it helps to balance the state budget in this next year. So the governor's budget proposal, you know, he has stated strongly his desire to end one-time fixes and really developing a long-term transit system that is predictable and allows us to both plan for both the capital and the operating expenses going forward. We went back and looked at the last 8 years, and we had over $100 million in one-time fixes trying to just maintain funding for the system. From the state general fund share. These included shifts from the property tax to property taxes and a variety of other sources. So this budget would really create a reliable and sufficient transit funding source that will grow with population growth. It will keep us as a metropolitan area highly competitive with our competitor regions, because in regional economies, that's who we are really competing with. We're competing with Denver and Seattle and Houston and Dallas. That's where employers are looking to locate their businesses. And it really encourages private investment in this region because it brings certainty to where these transitway developments are going to be. And it is an easy collection source as well. So skipping over my own notes here. Operations funding and tax policy goals is really to balance both the state, the regional, and the farebox recovery as part of the transit system to have a system that is fair and understandable. It provides greater reliance on a regional source to provide a regional service, less reliance on state sources, and it continues to maintain our 28% farebox recovery, which is really one of the top farebox recoveries for our transit system in our country. It does focus future state general funds on metro mobility services, and that's one that's an important service that we provide at levels required by the state to make sure that people with disabilities have good access to get where they want to go. So this is just a quick slide to let you take a look at where our farebox recovery is in relation to our competitor system. The Twin Cities is the red bar, fourth from the top. The very top, I want to explain, San Diego is kind of out of whack with all the other systems because they have a taxi, they call it the Tijuana taxi, but they have a transit system that goes to Tijuana, and we don't have a revenue-generating opportunity like that here. But you can see that we have one of the most competitive farebox recoveries in the country, so we try to use that farebox efficiently. And we think that this makes sense. You can see the peer average is only at 24.6%. So the outcomes from this budget really are services for both expanded regular route bus, both at the local service levels and at our express bus service by our suburban providers, provides for expansion for rail, and allows us to grow and serve the fast-growing number of customers who want metro mobility services. This will provide additional revenue for a variety of providers, certainly Metro Transit, our suburban providers, and our providers that we contract with to provide the metropolitan mobility service to our MTS. So back again, this is really the current commitment that I described to you today. Without additional resource, this is the system that we will have. We cannot expand and grow the system without additional resource. So let me describe to you what this additional quarter cent sales tax will purchase. First of all, it'll provide for 1% growth in the overall bus system for the next 20 years. So if you think about where our population is growing, it tries to keep up with our population growth. We're expecting about 900,000 more people will come and move to this metropolitan area or will be born here. So we are expecting growth in the area, which is great. But we need to plan today for that growth. So you can see here that with this additional funding, we would be able to fund three new LRT lines, 12 arterial BRT lines, and up to six highway BRT or managed line. And you can see that there's tremendous potential here throughout the region. It will also allow us to pay for the operations as well as the capital investment here. And it will address the shortfall that we have in this budget for the next biennium. So I just want to say that the risk of putting lines on a map is people are both. You've already made the decision that that's where that's going. No, we haven't. We have a process that we have to go through, and of course we would have to have the revenue. But it really is illustrative of corridors that local communities have asked for service in, where there is demand for service, and that would be part of our process of going forward. I want to identify for you the yellow lines on this map are a new type of service called arterial BRT. It is like an express bus route service on major arteries in our current system. It operates more like our LRT, but is much, much less expensive. So, you know, why is this important and why would this be a good investment for us as a state and a region? I know that you have either heard or you will hear from the ITASCA group. The ITASCA group is a group of CEOs in the Twin Cities region that did their own independent study of transit and the return on investments transit. And I would encourage you to get more information from them on that, because it was a very detailed and comprehensive study. But what they showed is that there is really, if we could build out this system as I've described to you in the previous slide, there would be a $6 to $10 billion return on that investment for that, for this region. They measured real costs to businesses, to individuals, to public sector. It includes travel time savings, it includes reduced vehicle operating costs, savings to shippers, and of course, reduced emissions, which improves our air quality. So, as I said at the beginning, you know, transit is so important to a strong economy. It connects people to jobs and businesses, to their customers. Today, there are 250,000 rides per day on our transit system. Actually, more than 94 million transit rides provided in this last year. 80% of the people using transit are going to work and they're going to school. So you can see how closely linked it is to the economy. And if you looked at the people who are working in downtown Minneapolis, 40% of them today are getting there by using transit. Transit connects people to work. It certainly creates jobs when you're building big transitway improvements like the new Green Line that's under construction. That project alone has produced about 4,800 jobs for construction workers. The new Southwest LRT project is projected to create about 3,600 construction jobs. But what's really more important is how it connects people to jobs along these corridors, and it expands what I would call the commute sheds. So if I I'm an employer in Eden Prairie, I'll now be able to access people who live on the Green Line in the Snelling area in St. Paul. They'll have much quicker, easier access to get to jobs in that job-rich corridor. So today, in the Central Corridor, there are about 280,000 jobs we expect with the addition and the expansion now of the corridor opening next year. That will grow to 374,000 jobs. Same thing with the Southwest Corridor. Today, really important job-rich corridor for the region and for our state, about 210,000 jobs here. We expect job growth to reach about at least 270,000. So you can see with job growth, more demand for people to get there, more congestion if we don't plan and invest now. There's been some great polling done by the chambers, Minneapolis Chamber, the St. Paul Chamber, the Twin West Chamber did some polling in January, and they asked people, would Minnesota benefit from having an expanded and improved public transit system such as rail and buses? And 8 out of 10 said yes. And more importantly, they also asked in the same poll, would you support a metro sales tax increase to fund transit? Does that make sense to you? And 65% of the people said yes. So I think the people are really understanding why this is important to them. And here's some quotes in the presentation from leaders at the chamber, Todd Klingel, president of the Minneapolis Chamber, Matt Kramer, president of the St. Paul Area Chamber, and Bruce Newstead, all understand that investing in transit is good for business and good for our region. So here's a quick map I want to show you, and I think this tells the story as well as anything. There's 69 people lined up next to that bus. And on the slide on the right, there's 69 cars. If every one of those people got out of the bus and got on their cars, that's what that lane of traffic would look like during the peak period. What's important for you to know is that today, transit is so important to relieving congestion in our region. One third of peak hour users, so people who are actually on the highway during congestion periods, are using transit. If we could expand the number of people using transit in our region, we would have to spend less money on expanding our roadways, and we get more people to work more quickly. If As we think about this, what it means on our arterial roads, even though there are only about 1 to 5% of the actual vehicles on the road, remember those yellow strips on that map? That's about 20 to 35% of the users on those arterial roads. It really relieves congestion throughout the system. Transit provides significant environmental benefits. Right now at Metro Transit, we continue to improve the fleet and purchase hybrid buses. 15% of the fleet is now hybrid buses. It's 132 buses total. Hybrid buses are really impressive. They reduce emissions by 85%. It's really the future of our technology. They also get a lot better fuel economy, about 33% better fuel economy. And that, in turn, makes us more cost-effective and less energy that we have to consume. Metro Transit and Met Council really is the largest consumer of diesel in the state of Minnesota because of the buses that we operate. So what we know with some of this investment, we've saved about $2 million in fuel consumption just this past year with these hybrid buses. So we think that this is a great investment for the future. Part of this expansion and this resource will allow us to continue to upgrade the fleet to be able to purchase these new hybrid buses. So, you know, transit development investment really leads to development around these transitways. They're fixed, they're permanent structures, they're signals to the market that they can invest there. When the Hiawatha Light Rail was planned, the projection really was that there would be 7,000 new units, roughly 7,000 new units built by 2020. Well, in fact, by 2005, we have 7,600 new housing units built, and this past year by 9,800 units. So it's really accelerated from what we thought the original forecasts were going to be. What's really been exciting is we've been able to see some new development already along the Green Line. We had a report presented to us by the Minneapolis and St. Paul Planning and Economic Development Departments. There's been $1.2 billion in building permits pulled along this corridor in this last year. And that, I think, is a good thing for the economy. It's a good thing for a system to be efficient. In 2012 alone, there are 18 new projects that were actually went under construction in this corridor. These 18 new projects are going to offer 2,300 new housing units and about over 100,000 square feet of commercial space. So we're beginning to see how this line, which is not even going to open until 2014, has been attracting significant market investment. This is a picture here of a project in Frogtown, Frogtown Commons right at University and Dale, close to the Capitol, that you can see that has a rental housing above, commercial development below, and senior housing next to it, which is another great demand. So our metro area is growing and changing. As I said, there's going to be about 900,000 more people who are going to be in this metropolitan area by 2040. And that's great. That means 570,000 new jobs, which is terrific for the economy and for our state, but it means that we have to plan for how we're going to move them around and how transit plays that role. You can see that, what's another significant thing about the growth in the population, though, is who is that going to be? That's going to be much more diverse, and we're going to have a lot more seniors. We're going to double the senior population here in 30 years, and what we hear when we talk to people who provide services to seniors, that transit is really very, very important to them. And what gets them to medical appointments, to drug stores, to grocery stores, and keeps them from being isolated. So we think there's going to be a growing demand for transit from both seniors and from the younger part of the population as well. So, and one thing I just wanted to stress is this just whole new idea that we're learning about how transit is really a tool to help attract and retain younger workers. We've learned some really interesting things about younger workers and what their priorities are and their goals are. We've seen a growth, this is interesting, in a number of young people who do not have a driver's license because they depend on transit and they want to use transit. So we think that is something that we need to pay attention to. In fact, in a recent survey of people who were drivers between the ages of 18 to 24, they said they would choose access to the internet over owning a car. So transit is a way for our hyper-connected world, for those of us who are on our iPhones, our iPads, our laptops, to extend our workday. If you go on to our buses and our trains heading into our central business districts, you will see people extending their workday all the time. It's a preference that people have. So it's very interesting as we're thinking about the future growth of the region and how we plan for it. Our ability to be competitive as a region with our major employers, what they say is talent is how you grow, and you attract talent because people want to live here. And there's amenities in this region that are important that improve the quality of life. So with that, I just wanted to show you how other regions, our competitor regions, how do they fund it? You know, how do competitor regions fund their system? Well, they look to the sales tax. This chart here shows you that most of the regions on the chart you already saw with fare box recovery, our competitor regions use sales tax. Atlanta, Boston, Cleveland, Dallas, Denver, Houston, they now have 1% dedicated from their sales tax to transit. And you can see the array. We are far behind that now with 0.25%. And the reason those regions have chosen to do that, it's about as close to a user type fee for people who live and travel in the region to pay as you can get, because the people who are in the region are benefiting from the improvements in congestion, whether they're on the train or they're not on the bus, whether they're in the car and not on the bus. So this is how our competitor regions think about it. We actually did a study to see how else do people do this? How do you plan for the future? How do you keep up with growth?
Chair Haig, we have about 17 minutes left for questions, and I just would ask the committee to look carefully at these last couple of slides, and maybe in the course of answering the questions, Chair Haig, you could refer to those, but I know that there are a number of questions, and we wanted to get those on the table. And I think similarly to our colleagues at MnDOT, Mr. Shettenden and Ms. And Chair Haig will be available to you as well if you don't get your question answered today. So I want to start with Representative Mahoney.
I didn't realize that I was going to get number one here. I've seen this presentation a number of times, and I'm kind of starting to see it in my sleep at this particular point. My question is, has the Met Council with the governor considered the message that this sends when you separate out our metro area from the greater Minnesota? I mean, we're talking 7 counties versus the 87 counties. And if we get a 900,000 people growing in the metro area, I know the number, I won't repeat it here, but if we get the legislators that come with 900,000 residents, Chair Hausman will understand this better than many, the metro area gets to pass the bonding bill and doesn't need the other 80 counties. So what's the connection? What draws us back together as a state? Because that's actually what we are, is we're a state for one state. We're not just a metro area and greater than everybody else.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, well, I think the governor would certainly agree with you on that we are one state, and this budget proposal is one small portion of an overall state budget proposal that really thinks about statewide. I think what this is really a strategy about how do we best leverage investment in this region? How do we pay for the transit and capital investment that we need going forward? Because that does help to fuel the economy, and that does help to fuel the economy of the entire state. So that's how I would look at it. I understand that the question you're asking really has to do with the politics of Greater Minnesota versus the region, and I leave that to all of you to figure out. as you sit at this table.
Representative Mahoney, a quick follow-up, because we've got four people on the list.
It's more of a comment. You know, if you look at that map, there's an awful lot of brown lines, which are buses, and different colored lines on one half, which makes it really difficult for some people to fully support this particular plan. That's a comment, not a question.
Okay. Here's our list. Representative Fitzsimmons, Earhart, Bernardi, Petersburg, Houseman, and Howe. I'm going to end the list at that point because I think that's going to take us to 11:30. So quick questions and quick answers. Representative Fitzsimmons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I was curious about is what have you looked into as far as studies or doing studies on side-by-side comparisons with LRT and BRT, and what are the cost differences, rider differences, flexibility, you know, some of those things to make sure we're looking at investments correctly.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Fitzsimmons, yes, we have done studies, and we do those studies because the federal government is our federal funding partner on BRT and LRT projects, and we have to meet federal and national cost effectiveness and competitiveness standards in order to get the federal investment in these projects. So, yes, there are distinct differences, and I can provide you with more information about those cost differences. So everyone here can see that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then also, I just would like to thank you, Mr. Chair. Noting the final arrival of transit users at their job source. Do you also look at where those people arrive to the transit? You know, my district is there's not transit that's in the district, so people that are potentially arriving in downtown Minneapolis don't get on a bus out their door, even though they arrive on a bus to their job in that breakdown. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, we can definitely provide you with that information. We do have very good information about where people come from when they come to park and rides, and we do know that people come from outside the seven metro county area to get on those transit systems. So we can provide you with that information as well. We have a lot of detailed information about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Hague. Looking at the build-out on page 3 and 4, I think it is, I understand that the new increase in revenue would fund this entire build-out, and I think that I was hearing that. What about the operating cost of this system? Is that also going to be paid for entirely by roads and rail as well?
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, the cost of $250 million a year that would be produced from, the revenue that would be produced at $250 million would go to pay for both the transitway capital investment and the operation of the bus, the arterial bus, the BRT, the LRT. If your question is, would it include road improvements? No, it would not. So if there are road improvements, for example, expansion in a MinPass lane, that is something that we do cooperatively with MnDOT.
That was my question. It was just, Mr. Chairman, it was just on the build out on your maps here, which has gone from small to big on page 3 to 4.
Right. Maybe I'll just put the next one up here. Yeah. Yes.
That was the one, Mr. Chairman. I was asking if the increased revenues would pay for both the build out and the operating costs. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair, they would.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So four questions, 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Vice Chair Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Hague. I have a question, I'll try to be as brief as possible. I think it's really important, the coordination, the planning with MnDOT, so that MnDOT's not coming through and doing a resurfacing project on Snelling, and then BRT comes through on Snelling, we really have to use our resources wisely and effectively. And I wanted to ask you the question, and I'm sure the committee is expecting me to ask this. Transit, people need to be connected to transit, and generally that's through walking there, sometimes biking there. How are you guys planning for people being connected with transit for all modes?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would agree that's a really important issue, and it is something that we think about in our transportation policy plan and pedestrian connection to transit. Both safety, clarity about how people get there is a very, very important issue. Though I haven't addressed it expressly here, we could provide you with more information about that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Chairman. The question I have is just related to the 570,000 jobs that we think there's going to be coming up in the next while. Do we have any idea as to what types of jobs those are? And the reason why I ask is because we generally base our assumptions on the future based upon the experience we've had in the past. And yet today I know that more and more of us are doing, through technology, things from home that we used to have to go physically to buildings with. And with schools now providing about 25% of some of their schools online and jobs that now can be done almost anywhere in the state, I'm just wondering if those jobs indeed require a transit in some of those cases.
Chair Haig.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I can't specifically answer the question about the specific types of jobs projected in the job growth, but I would agree with you that the issue of telecommuting is an important issue as we think about travel and transportation patterns going forward. It is something that we discuss and talk about in the transportation policy plan, and we could probably get you some more information about that.
Thank you. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up a bit on Representative Mahoney's point by referencing the page. It's your second page. Metro area is the economic engine of the state's economy. Seven county metro area has a gross metro product of approximately $200 billion, which represents approximately two-thirds of the state's GDP. And that kind of argument is the argument that I have used over and over as I have talked to my colleagues about why we should invest in Duluth, in Rochester, in Mankato, in St. Cloud, in Litchfield, in Winona, in Thief River Falls, all over the state. Those very kind of economic arguments. And the argument is, therefore, the state has an interest in a regional investment. This new direction, replacing state geobonding and state general fund with a local tax only, is difficult for some of us to comprehend. How will we ever make those arguments about statewide investment again? I know you said that's internal politics for us, but you are bringing the idea forward.
Chair Haig.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, I have to look back and think about the pace with which we make investments. I went to Denver 11 years ago to look at their system. At the same time we were building the Hiawatha Light Rail Line, they were building their first line. They instituted a 1 cent sales tax for the region. They now have 5 light rail lines built out in the last decade. So one of the challenges that we face with our current process is that we just can't move quickly enough. And that is one of the reasons why this dedicated revenue for this capital investment allows us to accelerate and build out the transit system. You know that if we aren't successful in this new investment for capital for our system, that we will need $118 million from the state geo bond fund for the state share of the $1.2 billion Southwest LRT project. And we will need that in the next 2 years to continue to be able to build that project. So to me, the issue really is how fast can you move this? And the sales tax allows us to bond locally as opposed to going back to the legislature to ask you to bond from the state geo bond.
Thank you. And this will be an ongoing conversation I think we're going to be having. The last question belongs to Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in order, and looking at the time, I'm going to serve up the softball question instead of go with the question
I
was going to ask.
You have a good slider, and I think that's also good to fix that.
But the question I have is on the impasse lanes. Can you tell us where the funds come from to build those lanes and then where the revenues go on those lanes? Who collects the revenues and who pays to build the lanes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to invite up Arlene McCarthy, who heads up our Metro Transportation Planning Service and has been our lead partner with MnDOT in this process. I just want to say initially that, though, as she gives you the full answer, that the idea of the MnPass lane is as much to control congestion as it is to raise revenue. So it's a dynamic pricing mile model that helps change consumer behavior. And I'll let you answer the rest of the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. It's the two MnPass lanes that we have in the region today. First are the 394 MnPass lane, and that was built it's been in place for quite a few years, originally as an HOV lane, then converted to the MnPass lane. And that was with a combination of primarily federal and state highway funds. There were really not transit dollars involved in that. The 35W MnPass lane to the south, which included a conversion, part of it was a conversion of an existing HOV lane, and part of it was new construction, including the dynamically priced shoulder, the very northern section of the northbound lane. That was a combination of federal funds, including the Urban Partnership Agreement, you might remember, that this region received, and also with state funds and state bonds, and we also used some of the transit funds of the highway funds for the 35W conversion. So our two examples to date, they've been each a little bit different situation.
Okay. Thank you. Very quick follow-up.
Well, the second part of that is, where do the revenues go? We didn't answer that. Thank you.
Thank you. MnDOT operates these lanes, collects the revenues, and the revenues used to operate the lanes. There is an administrative, a back office, shall we say, and then there's also the literally on the street type of operations that they fund. And then there's also, per legislation, a split of the revenues after those base costs that will go towards, part of it will go towards operating transit in the corridor.
Thank you. So thank you, members. Thank you to the Met Council. Again, as the governor has stated, just a couple things before we leave, very quick. As the governor has stated, this is a beginning point for a conversation and discussion, and we'll be using some of those ideas as we move forward. And then for the Finance Committee members, tomorrow we're going to have a discussion about federal funding, the MAP 21 program. On the 13th, we'll have local governments coming in with some of their financing ideas. And then on February 14th, a special Valentine's Day Transportation Finance Committee meeting with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Those policy members who just couldn't get enough of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, you're also welcome to sit on that. But all of these will be finance meetings. I think we are, at least for now, completing our joint hearings. So we thank the Policy Committee and Chair Earhart for joining us. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.